ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Friday. We are into round 8 of the AFL Premiership season, and it has started without an outcome. No winner out of Thursday night footy. We are still at the mighty MCG late on Thursday night as it's about to tick over into the new day and the new month. And the last day of April produced an absolute humdinger. 5 lead changes, a depleted Collingwood team. They led for almost 80% of the night. They led by as many as 7 points with 30 seconds to go. But as the full-time siren went and the last kick of the game was completed, the scores were level, 93 points apiece. Corbin Middlemass with you alongside Ben Cameron. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corbin. I didn't even know it was a draw as it happened. So I generally leave to go to the rooms with about a minute left in the game. So I zip down under the bowels of the MCG through the bull ring, down underneath. And there's a little TV where you come out of what would be the lifts. And all I see is Dylan Moore kick the goal. And I thought, oh, he's kicked the goal after the siren to lose by a point. Then I see the scores flash up 93-93 and realise it's a draw and I've got to work out which rooms I'm going to. So I didn't even know. It was chaotic.
There we go. Well, one man who was all across it up here is the Richmond champion, the GWS footballer, Brett Delidio. Hello, Lids.
Gents, good to be here. It's a game that sort of, I feel like we left one on the table for the Hawks, and we spoke to Jack Crisp after the game and he said, oh, we feel like we've lost because we were in front. So it was, you know, I've played in 6 draws and then I just don't reckon they're fun. I don't want to change what it is, but they're not fun to play in because it's just like, oh, what a numb feeling. I don't know whether to celebrate. I don't know whether to cry. What do we do? Do we learn anything from it? We you know, one more bounce of the ball one way and it could be potentially going, you know, just last the Saints, I suppose, all those years ago. Maybe, yeah, it's a weird feeling.
Inevitable conversation, Ben. So should we have extra time?
I'm probably a no. I think I'm a no. Yeah, the general consensus seems to be yes. Which way do you sit, Corbin?
No, I'm a no too, which is a bit boring. But all three of us, I'm happy with the draw as the outcome. I actually think it's a more intriguing result
later in the year
for the season. Mm. Yeah, it gives you that half game on the ladder.
Do you know what is funny? I interviewed Scott Hansen. Fans of the NFL will know him from NFL Red Zone. First ever game of Australian rules football. He's here at the MCG today and he got a draw.
Yeah.
And he's thinking, what, no overtime? Like, are we just accepting this result? So,
what about
very
these,
strange.
These two teams have played against each other for 101 years. It's their 174th meeting. First time they've ever played a draw. So we get to see it tonight against one another. Ben Cameron was down in the rooms. He spoke to a member from each camp, including Dylan Moore from the Hawks and Jack Crisp from the Magpies. And the question was posed to them about whether they want some extra time.
I'd love extra time, to be honest. The weirdest thing is you're standing on the ground, both teams, there's no song getting played. Mm. So you're kind of just there, crowds left, and you come into the rooms, and our families weren't even down here yet. So it's quite a numb feeling, and, yeah, I'd love extra time.
Look, I'm all for it. I feel like I could keep going. I feel great at the moment. Some blokes probably would disagree. But, yeah, as you know, it's a dull feeling with the draw. You obviously would probably rather win and lose. For me, I would, because it feels like we lost. Probably because we're in a good position to win the game. Might be different if we were kind of down and then had the last shot to draw. But, yeah, I'd probably take the 4 points.
So that was the first of our big three things. The second of them, I always say in a draw, there's always a winner and a loser, even though they share the 2 points. So, Lids, who won the draw?
I think the Pies won the draw. They were undermanned. You know, they took a lot of experience out of that side. You know, yes, they had Darcy Moore coming back in, but their ability to kick straight, essentially, was what won them the game. And Hawthorn's inability, I mean, nearly double the amount of inside 50s against, you know, 80 less disposals over the course of the game, 16 less clearances. They've been dominated, but their defence just stacked up so well. So in my eyes, I feel like that's a win for Collingwood, even though they didn't get the 4 points.
Yeah, it's weird that the team that was up by 7 points with 30 seconds to go, you would feel like, oh, we left one on the table. And yet the numbers are so lopsided, as you said. Plus 28 inside 50s. Scoring shots 28-18. Clearance numbers so lopsided. And Collingwood led for almost 80% of the night. They were so efficient going forward. And that scoreline, 15-3 to 13-15.
Yeah.
In the end, I tend to agree with you. I think the Pies were the winners out of the draw.
Yeah, I think the Hawks were the losers, definitely. I went to the rooms, as we've spoken about. And certainly the Hawthorn rooms felt like the losing rooms and the Collingwood rooms were a little more buoyant and a little happier.
A third of our big three things, we had this written in before the game started about the rules after the huge week that it had been with the arc and the stand rule and holding the ball and so on and so forth. How did we go tonight?
Well, there were a few moments. I mean, the big one was the Cam McKenzie 50-metre penalty when... who was it? Was it Jamie? Still Sidebottom took the mark at right half forward at the city end of the ground. And Cam McKenzie comes running by. I think a lot of people don't understand this rule. So if you are going to stand the mark, you can't come from in behind. So that's what he did. He ran from behind the player who...
You're inside the protected area. Is that right? Or not?
Well, I mean, if you're coming from behind, you'd have to run all of the way around the protected area and then come in from the front.
So the protected area is
not going to happen.
Protected area is meant to be 5 metres, isn't it?
Yeah.
Radius. So I think Lids will, as he did last night on the coverage, you'll dispute that he was more than 5 metres away.
Yes.
Which is where you're
not impacting the play whatsoever. And that's the frustrating part, is that you're getting a 50 against you for not impacting the play.
Yeah, but I think the point is they want that player out of the play entirely so that it's 18 on 17 for the team that has the ball, so the ball's more likely to be in motion. That would be their counter-argument to you, Lids.
It's a huge penalty in the moment of the game. Yeah. So it takes him from outside 50, 60 out on the boundary line.
So I think this
knocking one through from 10 metres out.
For what it's worth, I like the stand rule. I just don't like that interpretation of that bit where players running past out of the play and they're being pinged for it when they're outside that... in air quotes, 5 metres.
I think that's the point, though, isn't it? Like, we can argue the decision, but I think what we're actually arguing right there is the law. So the umpire's officiating it to the letter of the law. Yep. Whether we like that is a different debate.
Yeah.
Really? I think
more what we're saying is, like, we agree with the law. We think it was misapplied in this case.
I think the interpretation, he was outside five, in our opinion, from where we watch from here, and therefore that's why he got the 50 metres, because he thought he was inside the 5 metres protected area, and that's why, because he wasn't being told to stand from, you can't be told to be to stand forward of the mark and lateral to it. So
it's also hard for the umpire, depth perception-wise, from the corridor, to try and tell exactly how far away McKenzie is from side bottom. Yeah. So from up here, and I disagreed with Lids last night on air, and we saw on the replays, you could make the case that he was further than 5 metres out. And if that was the case, then I don't know. Matt, it seems like a huge penalty.
Let's ask Ray on Saturday.
Yeah.
I completely misjudged that. I thought we were debating. I was watching from the boundary. I thought he was within five. He'd come from in behind.
The free kick, which ultimately decided the game, or at least the outcome of the points. You happy with that?
Yep.
So if you missed it, Darcy Moore laid a tackle on Dylan Moore. There's lots of Moores going on. Essentially, free kick over the shoulder. Dylan goes back, kicks the goal, and they get out with 2 points. And the award for the stupidest interpretation or rule of the night clearly goes to the centre line for the ruckman. So twice tonight we saw players running, jumping, leaping at the ball as the spirit of the rule is designed, and then giving away a penalty for going over the centre line while the opposing ruckman doesn't jump and stands their feet planted on the ground.
That was only the intention of the law there was so that they didn't cross and wrestle, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Impede their jump. I think if they jump from behind the line and then cross it in the air, come on.
But you can't suspend the laws of gravity.
That's
while
what I'm saying.
In the middle of the air.
Lloyd Meek's, $1.10? There's no chance that he's stopping himself mid-jump to be able to go backwards.
Ridiculous. The Pies up to fifth as it sits on the table at the moment. So 4.5 wins. Hawthorne provisionally on top at 6.5 wins. But, of course, the rest of the weekend still to be played out. Sydney are one of the other 3 6-win teams coming into the weekend. They play Melbourne on Sunday. And, of course, the Dockers are on Friday night with a rare Friday nighter in Melbourne. Should we get on to the rest or the injuries?
Yeah, can I just pose a question before we move on? I was pondering this down on the boundary line tonight. Which record is more likely to be broken? Scott Pendlebury's games record?
I like this.
Or Jack Crisp's unbroken match streak, which is now up to, 270 as of tonight?
Yeah. Which one is more likely?
Yep.
The Pendles one.
I agree.
I think it's the Pendles streak. Yeah. Jack Crisp's.
It's remarkable.
Games.
270 games in a row.
Yeah.
And does not even want to blink at the thought of having a rest.
So the next most at Collingwood is
Josh Stakos with 108.
Yeah.
I just saw it on the screen.
It's insane, isn't it? So to think that he's second at the club and he's more than 150 behind Jack Crisp, who's out in front. And Josh, by the way, he's top six in the competition.
Yes, top five. Him and Blake Hardwick both. on 108 games.
Amazing. The injuries out of tonight, Ben, before we tie a bow on this. So Harry Perryman, the big one.
Yeah, hamstring. It looks like a garden variety hamstring. Darcy Cameron had an ankle issue at some point. Seems like he's okay. James Sicily had an ankle issue. He was very displeased with the trainers at different points. Your man, Barty, yep. After he went A over T, he'd been copping a spray from James Sicily. James Sicily also got patted on the back by one of his teammates at one point and then turned around and sprayed them for hitting him too hard.
Too aggressive.
I could not believe what I was witnessing from down on the boundary line.
A bit prickly, sis. I reckon the game was going... Yeah.
Look, we hope the trainer's okay, but let's be honest, it was a pretty...
Oh, poor old Bart, mate. I felt that sorry for him. He's trying to get out of the way, and then down she went, and then as he's gone to get up to go again, the ankle rolled, and he's hyperextended the knee, and down it goes again, mate. It was pure comedy, really. I felt that sorry for the old bugger, but...
Must admit, I'm a sucker for slapstick humour. Yeah. Like, yeah, I wish I wasn't.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not as much, but he's a terrific... So, terrific human.
Give him a shout out. So it's Bart, is it?
Yes, I know him as Bart. I don't want to bugger up.
He's a trainer at Hawthorn.
Yeah, physio.
Physio at Hawthorn, yeah. And he was trying to get out of the road, and the footy found him, and he slipped over, and then as he hurriedly tried to get up and come off, as Brett described, that's what happens. You may see some vision circulating on social media. Importantly, we hope he's okay, so all the best.
He was straight back to work. Like, he was treating James Amazing. Sicily and Amazing. Shortly after, so I think he's okay.
All right, let's get into it. Key question from each game as we work our way through round 8 of the AFL Premiership season. We'll start at Docklands. Friday night footy, the Dogs up against the Dockers. My question here is inspired by your former teammate Nathan Brown, who had a very shrewd observation, at least in my opinion, on Footy Classified during the week. And the question is Andy Brayshaw emulating 2017 Trent Cotchin?
Right.
What I mean by that is the
defensive mid-roll.
You compare their numbers, so down in disposals, but up in tackles and one percenters.
Yeah.
So basically saying, hey, Andy's playing a more selfless role, getting less of the footy, but he's more the team guy at the centre bounce.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. If that's I haven't done a deep dive into his numbers, but if that's the case, and he's then able to help out the side defensively, but also help, you know, in terms of negating one of the opposition's better mids. Yeah, absolutely. I think you need someone like that in your team. You know, I look at someone like in the Geelong side, Tom Atkins, his ability to be that tough, nuggety tackler. Josh Dunkley at the Lions. Like most teams have someone like that that can. James Rowbottom at the Swans.
Yeah.
Most teams have someone like that. If this is Brayshaw, well, we know he can go and find the footy when he needs to, and he'll turn one on, but I like it. Yeah.
I'm putting it on Freo tonight. Friday night. I feel like this is a big game for them in the context of their season. If they want to be the good team that we think they're going to be to come here and challenge ultimately when the business end of the season, I think it's so important that they not only finish top four, they finish top two. They get the advantages that come with it, not happening to leave Perth before grand final day. But we saw them play a Friday night against St Kilda. If it wasn't last year, it was the year before.
Oh.
They stunk it up in one of the worst games of footy you've ever seen. And then I think they lost a bit of faith, not just with the footy fraternity, but probably with themselves in that they were still capable of it.
Well, they went on a run after that, to be fair.
But yeah, but they were never the same team, and ultimately they didn't win a final and they bowed out. But I think for their legitimacy, they're playing a depleted Dogs team. This is just come here, slam dunk, knock it out of the
business
park.
Business trip.
It's a business trip. Yep. I want to see that from Freo.
I do always remember speaking to a member of the West Coast Eagles coaching staff in the wake of their 2018 premiership, and they told me that they thought it was absolutely significant that they didn't travel for the 5 or 6 weeks or whatever it was, because they won the home quali, home prelim, then travel for the grand final.
Over.
But
yep.
it was sort of 5 or 6 weeks with the pre-finals bye where they were in their own beds, no travel that helped them. Maybe just on Andy Brayshaw and what he's doing for the team is the answer to our next question, which is about the showdown. Adelaide and Port Adelaide, showdown 59. Why don't Richelli and Rankin attend centre bounce downs together?
It's obvious that, isn't it? You know, I don't even really need to ask the question. I think you can only go, if you're only going one way, the chance of being scored against the other way, that it's not their strong suit. And you've got to have those players in your side as well. I played with a bloke who was incredibly good going one way, in Dusty. He may give you some tackle pressure and whatever else, but it wasn't his role to then be the one charging back to the last line of defence. You know, and that's what I think with Rochelle and Rankin. They're strikers. Their ability to go and create stuff forward of the footy. But having two of them in there at once, that leaves a lot of their defensive work to be done by whoever the next mid is who's in there.
Tips the balance a little too far, doesn't it? Mm. Josh Carr, 10 and zip in showdowns.
I mentioned this to Lidge during the call of the Thursday nighter. So the only team you never lost to in your career was the Giants, and the only team you never beat was the Tigers.
Yeah.
It's the O's on his record on both sides, which nice little bit of symmetry in that.
Josh Carr, 10 and zip in showdowns as a player. 11 and zip if you give him the Ramsgate as well, which I think most people do.
Just on a serious one, Lid. So Jordan Dawson's week. I mean, this would be incredibly trying, not just for him. He's obviously not going to play. So he's not in the team after his brother's funeral in Robe, which is about an eight-hour car trip away on Wednesday. But for the team's perspective, so they played on Sunday in Brisbane. They couldn't get out that night. So they actually travelled home Monday. They had a live session Tuesday. Many of them went to Jared's funeral on the Wednesday out in Robe. Thursday, which was today, they had the captain's run, and then Friday is the game.
It'd be an eight-hour round trip. Is that what you're saying? It wouldn't be 8 hours there and 8 hours back.
Yeah, I think it's 4 hours there.
Yeah, 8 hours round trip.
So, what about some of the more difficult weeks, I guess, you've been a part of? Or how do you handle where you've got this very real life situation going on, but there's also, you know, the business to do at the end of the week from a football point of view, and we know what the priorities are, but it must be take a huge emotional toll on a group.
Oh, no doubt. And I think what you learn out of this is that life's far more important than football, and the support that you show your mates and your family and whatever else. I think that's the biggest part of it. But for me, in terms of like tough weeks, mate, nothing compares to losing a sibling or loved one. I remember we had to jump on a bus and because the volcanoes in Chile or something, we had to drive the whole way home from Sydney, you know, and then the next week we had to then jump on a plane and go back up to Brisbane, and I'm pretty sure we got both jobs done. Yeah, wow. You know, it was like, well, maybe we got nutted by Sydney. They might have been too good for us, but then we went up and beat Brisbane off the back of that. But that's nothing compared to jumping in the car to go and support a mate at a funeral, you know. Amazing. So that's the only thing that really comes off the top of my head.
Just before we move on from footy in South Australia, a big story broken by Braden Ingram today, who's a colleague of ours on ABC Sport, but working for Channel 9 tonight, saying that a gather-round deal is imminent, not as soon as tomorrow night when Andrew Dillon does come to town to watch the showdown. But he also said as part of the deal, South Australia is set to be introduced to State of Origin. So we're expecting that game next year to be WA and SA in Western Australia, and then possibly South Australia hosting a game in 2028. That's what Braden said.
Mm-hmm. I spoke about it during Gather Round, that in my conversations with people in and around the WA government, that they were saying one of the early proposals that was put forward was even WA and SA would play each other, say, on the Friday in shortened quarters, and then on the Sunday, the winner would play Victoria. So essentially, you'd have the three, that one team would back up and play twice in a couple of days.
Don't reckon that's getting the tick of approval.
Yeah, that seemed optimistic as one of the things that were put forward. But who knows what we end up with there. Oh, I think South Australia WA would be a fun game to have a look at and see what it looks like at this stage, and how much engagement it gets from other states.
Then do we have Allies v Vics back here?
What do the Vics sit out of you?
No, not this year. Like, sit out of you, yeah. But then the next year, then you have Allies v Vics maybe. Mm.
Essendon and the Brisbane Lions. This is the first leg of a double dipper at Dockland Stadium. Is Ben McKay an easy target? Is our key question in this game after his coach leapt to his defence during the week?
I don't think he helps himself with what he has, you know, done on the field. And certainly the clapping before the ball's gone out of play and missing kicks and just looking uncompetitive at times. Oh, I think that doesn't help, but they're in it. They're a side that's getting scored against reasonably heavily at times, and the ball is coming in there a fair bit. And maybe the expectation is too high, but sometimes all you want to see is effort, and that's what I think he's lacking at times.
We might move on from that game pretty quickly. Yeah, the West Coast Eagles and Richmond, and the big story today, which broke as we arrived at the ground today, was that Sam Lawler has a partial Achilles tear. So it does mean that 16 are on the injury list. That wasn't our question around the game, but a big story that is developing down at Tigerland with their number one pick and more broadly the injury list.
Yeah, no doubt there'll be a huge investigation, deep dive into why it's occurring and reoccurring. not just feel for Sam, and we don't know the full extent of it just yet. It's been reported as a slight tear, hasn't it? I'm pretty sure. So how long that will take, we don't know yet. But like Josh Smiley's the other one that's just like concerning that he can't even get out there without having another reoccurrence of his quad. You know, long term is Taj Houghton. They drafted him off the back of a knee, and then he's now got hip problems. Gibkiss has had repeat knee problems. Sometimes you can just be unlucky, but they're no doubt they're going to be doing a deep dive on it.
Their top 30 picks that they've had 9 of them over the last two drafts. They've played only 45% of available games in that period.
Oh, I've got a theory. I think it's the curse of Captain Blood. They've knocked down the Jack Dyer stand, 1915 Edwardian era structure, and I just think that
the ghosts
of the Jack Dyer stand are haunting.
They're getting them. They're getting the old possums that were up there, mate. I think
it's just running rampant.
That's the longest bow I've heard. But
I was going to say, I think the injury list too and their problems stretches back further when the grandstand was still standing. But it is the worst injury list in the comp over the last 2.5 years. So that includes Essendon's horror run. Who needs to win more? So Richmond have lost the last 12 games. Their last win came in Perth against the Eagles, which is back where they're at this weekend.
Oh, I think no doubt for energy for the club, the Tigers need it more. But for Minnie and his boys, they've been probably struggling for a little bit longer even than the Tigers have. So it's a big one. The Eagles just need to get done given the extent of the injuries. Yeah. For the Tigers.
I think the Eagles need a win too. I feel like with Richmond, it's almost a built-in excuse now. They got all these injuries. They probably got a little bit of equity on the back of what they did last year. No one thought they were going to win 5 games. But if the Eagles started the way they did, went to... remember, they came home from Adelaide having beaten Port with so much optimism, got smacked by Sydney, and now essentially they got smacked last week by St Kilda. If all of a sudden they drop this game, which is one in a little winnable stretch for them, I think that's almost even more of a setback for West Coast.
Just this stat on the West Coast Eagles as well. In the last 5 years, the Eagles have lost 9 games by 100 points. The other 17 clubs have lost a combined 7 games by that margin in the same time. Just very quickly, which crop of young stars would you rather have, Richmond or West Coast?
Richmond.
I think I'm leaning maybe West Coast.
Mm. West Coast, I think, has got...
I think they've got the higher end talent with Reid, Dersma, Duff Tytler. Mm.
Job Shanahan.
Job Shanahan, I agree with that. But I think we haven't seen enough of these young players yet from Richmond to be able to fully judge.
Geelong and North Melbourne. So this is another Twilight game. We've got head-to-head Twilight games on Saturday. How much did you read into Geelong's loss last weekend to Port Adelaide?
A little bit. I was concerned by their inability, for some of their older players without Blitzarves in there and how quickly, defensively they looked unstable. And then, the lack of impact probably at their captain had up in the front half. I thought Paddy just looked like he's either underdone or he's the end is coming, and that's unfortunately, and he's one of my favourite players to watch when he's up and going. I'm not for one bit poo-pooing his career or writing him off. Don't think that I am. But unfortunately, the end comes for all.
North impressed me on Sunday, by the way.
They were good.
In Canberra.
Fight was good.
Wasn't it? Yeah, I was a little worried about them. I sort of thought that they'd been up for a period of time, and I thought the Giants were sort of coming.
Got nutted on a few calls again, so, yeah.
It was a controversial ending. The Cats, by the way, this is the longest win streak in footy, any one team over another. So they've won 14 in a row against the Kangaroos. The last time they lost to the Roos was round 15, 2015. So you have to go back over a decade since they last lost to the Kangas.
Carlton and St Kilda, who's winning the breakup? Both of the Silvanis have jumped over to St Kilda and TDK as well.
Who's winning?
Yep.
Oh, the Saints are winning that one, I think. I think that the Blues are their footy is not actually that bad. They just can't finish games, can they? But until you start banking Ws, it makes it very hard to put a case forward for it.
Do you reckon there'll be much emotion in this?
No.
Yeah.
It'll be fake emotion.
Right. I feel like the TDK one was pretty played out. Everyone kind of knew he was leaving.
And then he made his awkward speech after.
That was really awkward.
That was,
I was down in the rooms for that, and I felt awkward standing sort of 15 metres away from him.
The Silvani one feels like it's a bit more personal, like the way that the relationship ended with his old man.
Yeah, I think the old man part of it's got more to do with that. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see how it all plays out. But you can't do anything anyway these days. You end up just costing yourself a heap of money.
They've both had their off-field distractions this week. Obviously, Carlton have handed over their internal investigation to the AFL. It was also reported that the club doctor was on personal leave. And, of course, for Ross Lyon, where there was the story that emerged during the week about a comment that he made to the First Nations players that that caused offence, and he was forced to apologise. That was all made public.
When did he make that comment? Was that after the game, or was it...
No, it was at training.
It was at training in the beginning of April.
Right.
And it came out late April.
I thought it was strange that the CEO
didn't know about it until it
was reported, the night it was reported. I mean, that wouldn't cut the muster. I wouldn't think anyway at a publicly listed company.
All right, on to the next game, Sydney and Melbourne. So a 31.5-point underdog, the Demons, in this game. We'll get to our Super Dogs in just a moment. But a good old-fashioned ruck-off at the SCG. This is Gawn versus Grundy.
Yes.
It's also King versus Cox. So two ruckmen in the coach's box. It's also two ruckmen out there on the field. And just so happens, Brodie Grundy happens to be celebrating a little milestone game, his 250th match, coming up against his former teammate in Max Gawn. So the question for you, Lids, is who is the All-Australian ruckman as
right
it
now?
Sits right now?
You know I'm always picking Max Gawn. Oh, I think what he does for a guy his age and has done consistently. He's a bit like Jack Crisp. You know, he just consistently performs week after week. He might have one or two bad games a year, if that. But his high is greater than anyone else's as a ruckman.
Mm. Oh, I agree with Lids. And I think he's become an unbelievable statesman of the game. I spoke about it last week or on Sunday night with Half, that when it's time to joke, he jokes. He can be funny. He can be self-deprecating. When it's... times are tough at Melbourne. He always fronts up and speaks.
Yep.
He's one of the best fourth quarter players we've ever seen. I think he's an absolute champion, Max Gawn. I think it's him.
The other guy to factor in all this is Luke Jackson. And yet, as you know, Lids, I love my boxing and in the fight game. And when the champion's in about, there's a lot of old school boxing heads that will basically say, hey, yeah, when the champion fights the challenger, you have to take the round from the champion. So if it's a close round, the champion should get the nod or whatever in a 10-9 round. I feel like it's a bit like that with Max, that he's the 8-time All-Australian. He's the incumbent.
Come and grab it.
So if they're all playing great footy and we all see them on about the same level, when they come up against each other, these are the games that Grundy and Jackson need to cash in and actually beat Gawn to prove that they've had a better year than
exactly, because it'll come down to that at the end of the year, how they go against each other.
Pickett, does he get the tag? James Jordan, the padlock?
Yeah, has to.
Yep.
Has to.
Heaney comes back in. And the other interesting matchup to look out for here is Simon Goodwin, who Tom McCartan credited him with getting the offense up and firing at Sydney, which is something obviously he was never able to do really with Melbourne in their mid-forward connection. Now the D's are humming. They come back together with obviously Goodwin as part of the senior member of the coaching staff at Sydney up against the team that he led to their drought-breaking premiership 5 years ago.
And we had the Guerra sacking during the week as well, which was a little bit of a shock. I don't think it will impact the playing group too much, but we did see my favourite manoeuvre, the Dick Cheney manoeuvre as well. Charged with selecting someone, you're on the panel that appoints yourself essentially. So Dan Taylor wasn't necessarily on the panel, but Peter Bell did it famously at Fremantle.
Yep.
We've seen recently the CEO at Essendon,
Tim Roberts.
And Dean Solomon off the board onto the coaching panel.
Yep. So it's a popular... Will the players be a little shook by what happened during the week?
No, don't think so.
No, just on they trot.
Yeah, well, how the business runs doesn't really affect how you then train and play.
Gold Coast up against GWS. This is the last game of the weekend. This is a true Sunday night. It doesn't start till after 7 o'clock Eastern time. So just after... Well, they're on the same time as us at the moment, aren't they? Everyone's on the same time zone, East Coast of Australia. Just after 7 o'clock local time. Can you have too many top guys is the question here. And this is on the back of the highlight during the week that Gold Coast, out of their 23 players, they've got 18 that were drafted in the top 30.
Yeah.
So they've got all these top picks. Can you have too
many... Not enough soldiers. Yeah, I thought that has been the case with a lot of those younger sides and then players that aren't willing to then sacrifice for the team because they think they're the star. And I got in trouble. I had to ring Phil Davis and Steve Canelio about this when I left the place. I said, no, it's all well and good that when everyone's going well, but then when things get hard, every single person there, because they are a star, they think that they have to be the reason versus just do the simple things, hit the easy kick that goes there, and then we'll finish off our good work because we are a good team. But that's, I think, what's happening at the Gold Coast at the moment. They've got a lot of players, but not enough players willing to just do what's needed and required.
Incredible last 16 games they played against each other. GWS are 15-1, and the one game they lost was by a single point down in Ballarat. Superdog time.
Let's do it.
You're keen to get it. Ben, I think Ben's keen to get out of here than you are today, Lids. Our Superdog selections. You get 5 for a cover, and you get 5 for the spread, plus the outright victory margin, and you get 1 for a push. There's still so many people come up to me and say, I don't understand how the scoring system works. Basically, what we're doing is we're picking underdogs. Mm. You get a points advantage. You get the head start in the game. Essentially, if your team gets close on the point spread, you get 5 points for that. If they win outright, you get 5 points plus the winning margin. So that's the shorthand way of trying to explain that. Ben Cameron's on 62 points. He collected another 5 during the week. Had North Melbourne with a 16.5-point head start against the Giants. And, of course, they got within 7 points. You took Essendon.
Oh, stinking. Didn't they stink it up?
Stayed on 15. I took the Crows, who also didn't get within cooee of the Brisbane Lions last Sunday.
Who am I going to take? Who are you going to take?
This week. So the Western Bulldogs catching 19.5 points against the Dockers. Port Adelaide with a 12.5-point head start against Adelaide. Essendon getting 41.5 against the Brisbane Lions. The Tigs with 16.5 points against the West Coast Eagles. North Melbourne get a 28.5-point head start down in the Cattery against Geelong. Carlton with 14.5 against St Kilda. The D's 31.5 points head start up against Sydney in Sydney. And the Giants with 18.5 points against the Suns on the Glitter Strip. I think it's a fun round. There's a few options here.
I'll go first. I'll take the Giants plus 18.5.
So you're winning and you get to go first. That makes sense, doesn't it? Right. If you're going to do that, I'm going to take is it the Saints who have got a 14?
No, Carlton get
Carlton
the head start.
The head start. I'm going to take the Saints.
So you're going to take Carlton with a 14.5 point head start?
So Carlton have got the 14.5.
Yep.
No, I'm not doing
Saints
that.
Are the favourite.
Nah.
Do you understand the game?
No, I don't. I'll take Adelaide then.
I mean, you get Port Adelaide with 12.
Yes.
Okay, there we go.
I've never understood this game, and you make me play it at 11:30 at night every single week.
I did my best to explain the rules as simply as I could.
Why do you think, when you say, hey, good Superdog, and I'm like, yeah. Great.
He's dirtied up right at the finish, which is a great point. All right, I'm going horrendously at this so far this year, but I'll take the D's. Give me 31.5. That's a reasonable spread to hang with the Sydney Swans and real test of their legitimacy up in the,
right.
the Harbour City. Good on you, Lids. Appreciate your time.
No worries at all, boys.
Okay, bonus, Lids. You're with us Saturday?
A Saturday again.
How good's that going to be?
You're no
Lids on AFL Saturday there through ABC AFL Daily. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Corbin.
That's us done. We're going to get out of here. Enjoy your weekend of footy, of course. Keep it locked on ABC AFL Daily, your home for the footy conversation with 5 episodes a week.